There's an infinite number of monkeys out here who once told us about the script for Hamlet they worked out.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're stepping into a really powerful story. It's from a book called Fracture.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't just, you know, a simple narrative. It's raw. It's immersive. It pulls you right into one man's world dealing with, well, immense loss, serious mental struggle, and then this unexpected path to healing.
It's quite the journey.
Yeah. And it's all set against this incredibly vivid backdrop of Da Lat in Vietnam. The city almost becomes its own character.
That's absolutely right. And for this deep dive, our source material comes straight from the book itself, compelling excerpts from Fracture.
Okay.
What really makes it stand out and why we wanted to look at it is that it's all first person. You get this incredibly intimate, unfiltered view inside the protagonist's head.
Right into his thoughts.
Exactly. As he's grappling with this profound grief, wrestling with his own professional background, actually, as a psychologist, and just, you know, desperately searching for meaning after his world's been turned upside down.
So get ready, because we're going to explore how someone navigates just this crushing sadness. We'll look at how a city, Da Lat, plays this really active, transformative role.
Yeah, the setting is crucial.
And we'll touch on how different cultures might define and experience things like mental health and healing. You're really going to get a unique perspective on a very human struggle here. It's packed with, honestly, some surprising observations and really moving moments. This book review, I think, highlights something special.
Definitely.
Okay, so let's start unpacking this journey. Right from the beginning, Fracture throws you into the deep end. His state is described as a major depressive episode.
Mm.
And the language is just so visceral. Things like sheets glued to skin, marrow sour, feeling this chloroformed darkness and the void humming behind my eyes. Wow. It's intense.
It really is. It's not just saying he felt bad. It puts you right there in that physical sensation of anguish.
Yeah, it's almost suffocating.
And what's fascinating, as you mentioned, is how his internal state gets mirrored, maybe even amplified, by Da Lat itself. Well, the humidity, for example. It's not just weather. He calls it a physical thing, even a layer of condensation on my soul.
Wow.
So the city isn't just a pretty backdrop. It's beautiful, sure, but it can also feel oppressive, almost like it's collaborating with his inner turmoil, weighing him down.
Okay, I see that. And the source of all this overwhelming grief is Lent. Her absence is everywhere.
Alston.
He says she's everywhere. Her memory is like a splinter under my nail. And there's this incredibly powerful scene. The mangoes.
Oh, yeah.
Just seeing mangoes, because they were her favorite, triggers this complete breakdown for him. Right in the middle of a market. It really shows how grief can just ambush you.
That mango scene is so poignant. It really makes you ask, how do you even live day to day when loss is that pervasive? When, you know, ordinary things are just landmines of memory.
Right.
He talks about having threshold anxiety, like at their old cafe. He literally can't bring himself to go inside to cross that line.
Just stuck outside.
Exactly. Yeah. Paralyzed. And his journal entries capture this too. There's this line, the language of loneliness has no subject. It conjugates only in the passive.
Oof. That line, the language of loneliness has no subject. That really hit me. It's like the pain is so big, he can't do anything. It just happens to him.
Precisely. It's an existential state, not just a feeling.
And it highlights this really interesting conflict because, as you said, he's a psychologist. He knows the theories.
Right. He has the academic toolkit.
But he's trying to apply it to himself, and it's just not working. His journal becomes this battleground full of notes, half-written papers, medical bills. It's messy.
It really underscores the massive gap between understanding grief intellectually and actually living through it, doesn't it?
Absolutely. What does that say about, you know, the limits of just knowing stuff when you're really suffering?
Well, that's a central theme, I think. Theory versus raw experience. And this is where the story takes some really interesting turns. The narrative starts introducing these encounters that kind of blur the lines. Is it real? Is it hallucination? His mind seems to be reaching for something beyond his usual frameworks.
Like what?
He seeks out this old monk at a temple, and the monk offers these insights that are profound, but also really paradoxical. They completely challenge his Western psych training.
Oh.
Like the monk tells him, you want to understand, but you do not want to feel, suggesting his intellect is almost a defense mechanism.
Ah, so analyzing it is a way to avoid actually feeling the pain.
Kind of, yeah. Shielding himself.
That's a radical way to think about suffering. Not escaping it, but maybe integrating it.
Exactly. And the monk goes even further. He says things like, then you eat memory, in Vietnamese, ong kiek.
Eat memory. Wow. What does that even mean?
It implies this radical shift, right? From trying to push memories away to somehow consuming them, making them part of you.
Instead of fighting it.
Right. And then the protagonist asks if you can be addicted to loss.
Can you?
And the monk just smiles and says, that is why you come to temple.
Huh. Like the temple is a place to confront that very tendency to cling to pain.
It suggests a really different perspective on healing. It's not about erasing the past, but fundamentally changing your relationship to it.
So how does this connect back to his professional side?
Yeah.
His psychology background?
Well, it fuels these intense internal debates he has. It's almost like he's arguing with ghosts of his training figures like Freud or Jung.
Seriously, like in his head.
Yeah, spectral figures challenging his ideas about self, memory, repression. They force him to confront really tough questions, like the big one. Do you want to be cured or do you want to remember?
Cure or remember, that's heavy.
And his struggle to answer that, especially when he finally says it in Vietnamese, em không muốn kinh.
Which means?
I don't want to forget, never. That moment is huge. It's him choosing memory, choosing Lin, even if it means choosing the pain that comes with it.
Wow. Choosing not to forget, even over being cured. That feels like a real turning point. Like forgetting her would be worse than the pain itself.
Absolutely. It reframes the goal entirely.
And while all this intense internal stuff is happening, these, you know, spectral debates and monk wisdom, the book also shows these small moments of just basic human kindness starting to pull him back to earth.
Yes, those are so important.
Like that breakdown in the market with the mangoes. A total stranger, Tuan, steps in.
And Tuan's approach is so different, isn't it? It's simple, practical, no complex theories.
Right, none of the psych jargon.
He just says, losing someone is hard, it takes time. And then gives this really grounded advice about the mangoes. Eat slowly or not at all.
Just basic human understanding.
Exactly. It's this stark contrast to the protagonist's intellectual wrestling, and it's clearly what he needs in that moment. Simple comfort, human connection.
It really shows that sometimes help comes from unexpected places, not always the experts.
And then there's another key figure, Mrs. Nguyen, his landlady. She offers a totally different kind of care.
How so?
Well, when health officials show up worried about his state, she basically takes charge with this benevolent command. She downplays his symptoms to them. Says he's just my tired and ripped one. Very sad. Not dangerous. She kind of protects him.
So she reframes it in simpler, less clinical terms.
Exactly. And then she gives him these firm, kind instructions. You must eat more. Clean up. Done doopy. She brings this basic sense of order back into his life.
Like practical care, not just abstract sympathy.
Precisely. And it highlights this fascinating cultural contrast. Her approach is pragmatic, focused on basic needs, community. She reminds him, subtly, that survival was not a solitary project.
It's a different way of looking at well-being altogether, isn't it? Less individualistic, maybe.
Very much so. A focus on functioning within the community, on simple acts of living.
So you have Tuan's empathy, Mrs. Nguyen's practical care, and then there's the ghost of Lin herself. You said she shifts.
Yeah, that's another crucial development. Initially, her presence feels haunting, maybe even accusatory.
Like she's blaming him.
Or just amplifying his guilt and pain. But gradually, that changes. Her visitations become less about torment, more like teaching.
Teaching what?
Teaching him how to let go. She actually tells him, sometimes I think I'm just here to help you let go. And then this really profound line, to let go is to honor the thing you held. It means you loved enough to end.
Loved enough to end. That reframes letting go completely. It's not forgetting. It's an act of love.
Exactly. It's one of the book's most powerful ideas. Letting go isn't abandonment. It's acknowledging the depth of the connection by allowing it to transform.
So her ghost, shifting from tormentor to guide, mirrors his own internal shift towards acceptance.
Perfectly. It shows him integrating the grief, learning from the memory, rather than just being crushed by it.
Okay, so after all this, the internal battles, the external support, the shifting perceptions, where does he actually end up? What does this healing look like?
Well, we see him back teaching at the university. And significantly, he's presenting on this Vietnamese concept.
Bun thien. Bun thien. What's that?
He explains it as the kind of sadness that doesn't come from one big disaster, like his loss of Lin, but from the everyday accumulation of small absences, small disappointments.
Like a background hum of sadness.
Sort of. He notes that in the West, we might call it depression, but here in this context, it's seen as well, just part of life.
That feels like a huge shift in perspective for him.
It's a massive aha moment. It shows he's really started to integrate into the local way of understanding emotion, moving beyond his rigid Western categories.
And his language skills are improving, too.
Yes, and not just for talking. He feels it's a way of oxygenating the text of his own life, finding new words, new ways to frame his experience. Mm. He even shares this radical coping idea. Sometimes the only way to survive is to make a religion out of your pain.
I mean, make a religion out of pain. That's intense. Embracing it, finding ritual in it.
That's how it reads, finding meaning within the suffering itself.
And his daily life reflects this change.
Absolutely. We see these new routines. He's sweeping the temple grounds with the monk. Mm. And the monk actually praises his sweeping, his stillness. It's symbolic of inner calm.
What?
He's sharing fu, the soup, with Tuan, who tells him simply, you're one of us. A real moment of belonging.
That's lovely. And the letters to Lin?
He still writes them, these unsent letters. But the act itself feels different now. It's described as maintenance, as survival. Not a desperate plea anymore, but a ritual. His connection to her memory has changed.
It's become part of his life, not something that stops his life.
Exactly. And this culminates in this feeling he describes as a perpetual spring in Dilett. Not like he's cured and everything's perfect, but like there's ongoing renewal.
A process, not an endpoint.
Right. He revisits places like the gardens and just appreciates them without the old ghosts haunting him. He helps a lost tourist, speaks Vietnamese naturally, and has this thought. The memory no longer stung. If anything, it felt like a badge. Evidence of progress.
A badge. Like proof of what he's overcome.
Yeah. And the final feeling isn't that the ache is gone, but that it's changed. The ache was still there, but it felt less like a wound and more like a scar.
Wound to scar. That's powerful.
And the final, perfect symbol. He signs his last letter to Lin, not just with his English name, but with his Vietnamese name too, Viet Con, the one he's practiced. It signifies this complete integration.
Wow. What an incredible journey that book, Fracture, takes you on. This has been a fascinating deep dive. As a book review, it just really underscores that healing isn't neat or linear.
Not at all.
And that truly understanding loss, maybe even learning to live with it, can lead to something richer, a more integrated sense of self. It doesn't offer easy answers.
No quick fixes here.
But it shows a path towards acceptance, finding a way to live alongside grief, all within this really interesting cultural frame.
Definitely. The book strongly suggests recovery isn't about erasing the past, but maybe becoming fluent in loss, integrating it.
Fluent in loss. I like that.
And it leaves us with a really important question, I think, for all of us, really, in a world that often pushes us to just get over things quickly. How do we figure out the difference between what we want to forget and maybe what we need to remember to actually move forward authentically?
Mm. What we need to remember to move forward, that is definitely something to chew on. Until our next deep dive, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep finding those surprising nuggets of knowledge out there.